show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn Baseball Prospectus affiliate. Folks, we're kind of in that little bit of a lull period here where, you know, spring training has started, so the newness is starting to wear off now. They're playing games, they're getting into it, but things haven't really ramped up yet. You know, pitchers are only pitching an inning or two and that kind of a thing. So a little bit slower period, but there's some interesting things that have popped up, and we're starting to see what the kind of narrative threads of spring training will be as we hurtle towards opening day. So we'll get to those in a second. But first, of course, I am Jeff Herr, and with me, as always, the indomitable Michael Engel. Mike, how are you doing on this pleasant evening? I'm not sure what the weather's like in Lawrence, but I would say it's pleasant.
Yeah, it's decent. I would say that all in all, I am, one, fending off some deja vu, and two, I'm all right. I'm just hanging out. So
fair enough. That's not deja vu. It's just a glitch in the Matrix.
Right.
Did you see this article recently? I think it was in the New Yorker, about how everything that's happening recently is proof that we are all living in a computer simulation.
I have not seen that.
I can't tell if it was written facetiously or if it was just written by some like super out there person. I don't know. But it's essentially like, okay, you know, if aliens or whoever, you know,
right,
in some sort of Kurt Vonnegut world, were controlling everything, you know, all our inputs into this, you know, massive shared world that we live in, then, you know, they're freaking out in their external world and causing glitches and issues. And that's why Trump won the presidency, and that's why all this Russia weird stuff is happening, and that's why all these weird things are going on, and they had this list and all this stuff.
And the Oscars.
That's right. Yes, the Oscars too. That's actually, I think that was like the final straw. That let's see.
And the Cubs winning the World Series.
That's right. The Royals and the Cubs and winning the back-to-back World Series.
Oh my God, I'm convinced.
This, yeah, 3 days ago. Did the Oscars just? It was actually, the Oscars was the one that sprung it. But did the Oscars just prove that we're living in a computer simulation? Adam Gopnik.
Oh, I know him. He's pretty good.
So again, I can't tell if it's written facetiously. I would have to assume.
I think a little bit, yeah.
It is the New Yorker too, so they rather enjoy being cheeky.
Yeah,
but you know, I don't read a ton of the New Yorker, but this crossed my timeline on Twitter, so I'm gonna send you a link to this so you can check this out at your leisure.
Okay, cool. Everybody else, you have to find it yourselves.
Yes, it's on the New Yorker. Just, I typed in New Yorker, we are living in a simulation, and it pops right up. So there you go. If you want to be, if you want to follow along on the show, just start Hotel California right now.
Right.
And we're all good.
Loop it 7.5 times.
That's right. And you'll be synced up perfectly.
And then start playing Barbie Girl for an hour after that, and you'll be
yes.
fine.
Yes. That's just for fun.
Just, I know, right?
That's a good song.
That's
right?
Just normal.
I mean, that's what I do after the show every time. So, you know, whatever. But that's a different topic. We'll steer it back towards baseball.
Yeah,
now.
Let's actually talk baseball.
And, yeah, there we go. I guess that's what we're doing here on this podcast.
I guess.
So I think we've got, Mike, I think we've narrowed it down. I use the we term in the figurative sense, you know, of the media and just fans in general. There's kind of two major storylines that are driving spring training. We'll throw them both out there, and then we can just kind of discuss. I think the biggest one, at least in terms of an unknown, is the second base situation. Okay. And, you know, it's kind of interesting because I felt like there are different organizations in different sports that they just have something, like have a certain position or certain something that they just can never quite figure out. You know, for the Chiefs, it's quarterback. Ever since Lynn Dawson, the Chiefs have not been able to figure out the quarterback situation. It has held them back as a franchise. You know, I mean, then you've had the Chicago Bulls. You know, they've obviously it's hard to replicate the greatest player ever. So, you know, they've been trying to get some magic back after ever since Michael Jordan left, thought they had it with Derrick Rose, and it hasn't worked out. They just haven't been able to figure it out. You know, so all these kind of different instances, and after having Frank White for so much of the Royals history and winning all those gold gloves and having his number retired and all the rest, you know, it seems like the Royals just can't figure out second base. You know, they've had a couple decent stopgaps. Mark Rozalonik won a gold glove, and you know, they've had a couple decent prospects, and nothing has just been like, okay, we're set. You know, like when Eric Hosmer mm-hmm. came up and he turned out to be the real deal, it was like, okay, we're set at first base.
Yep.
You know, at least until he becomes a free agent. Same deal with Mike Moustakas was, you know, he obviously had his issues, but Alcides Escobar, like, okay, boom, he's proven
there's
he
a shortstop.
Shortstop until he's a free agent. Lorenzo Cain, there's our center fielder, Gordon. You know, so those were, but second base, they just haven't been able to do it, you know, and Raul Mondesi came up. There's basically four contenders right now. Raul Mondesi came up last year, was completely overmatched, had no business being in the major leagues last year. Now, he is very, very young. So, you know, they accelerated him because they thought he could handle it. I think they were proven wrong. But, you know, sometimes it takes that little bit. You know, if you go back and look at, you know, Mike Trout had some limited time in 2011, I believe, before he blew up in his true rookie season. And he you know, his stat line doesn't look very good. So, but he came back and, you know, then he's been an MVP conversation and he's won multiple since. So, you know, it could be something where maybe Mondesi takes his short experience last year, turns it into good stuff this year. Who knows? Remains to be mm-hmm. seen. Next, we have Christian Colon, who, you know, he was drafted as that high floor guy but low ceiling. So the idea being he could move through the system quickly, he'd be a dependable player, you could put him in the lineup, he'd be a major league player, average to slightly above average, and they could just go about their business. They wouldn't have to worry about second base for a while because he could play it well enough, you know. That has not turned out to be the case. He's never really truly gotten that he's kind of almost in that Johnny Giovitella scenario. He's just never mm-hmm. quite gotten that. He's had some extended time at second base playing every day, but never, you know, just been like, okay, you're our guy, go make this happen. And then you've got Whit Merrifield, who played really well last year when he first came up and took over that second base role, dipped really bad, had just a really poor stint for quite a while, got sent back down, came back up late in the season, actually performed really well. So, you know, I think you've got a good idea. I mean, he's old. He's an older, in terms for how little experience he has, he's an older guy. So, you know, I think you know what you're going to get from Merrifield at this point.
Yeah.
And then the fourth kind of name that's been thrown into this mix is kind of a wild card, really, is Chester Cuthbert. You know, he filled in for Mike Moustakas all last season and did really well, much better than I think a lot of people thought that he would do, and proved that he, you know, not only could he hack it, but that he belongs at the major league level. You know, offensively, he did really well. So, you know, I think he surpassed expectations for what his scenario was. But, you know, now we have those expectations aligned, and they want him offensively. They want to have him as an option, I think the Royals do. So they're trying to see if they can't move him to second base and then, you know, maybe do some sort of rotational DH thing. But, you know, from everything that we know, and, you know, talking with Clint, who's seen him a lot, Clint Scholes, who's seen him a lot in the minors and who, you know, obviously knows more than I do anyway, in terms of how to truly, you know, evaluate whether players can fit at certain positions, and just, you know, a lot of the consensus being he doesn't have that kind of second base ability. You know, he's a third baseman for a reason. So, right. You know, who knows how that's going to be, but you know, I think it's the Royals are just like, hey, we're just throwing spaghetti at this point. If it sticks, it sticks. You know, we want Cuthbert to be in the mix here, and this is the easiest route for him. So I guess we'll see what happens. But so those are kind of the four names for second base. And the other major story is how the pitching lineup, or the starting rotation will shake out. Nathan Carnes had a really good day yesterday, or day before yesterday? Yesterday.
It was Wednesday. Yeah.
Wednesday. So yesterday, as of the day we're recording this, which is Thursday, but he got through two innings on 19 pitches, struck out three batters, and he actually was so efficient. I heard this on the radio this morning that after he was done, they actually sent him back out to the bullpen because they wanted him to throw more pitches.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's said, you know, in some of his interviews, he's taking this very seriously. He wants that fifth starter spot. He is dialed in right now. And in the early going of spring training, he's looking very good. But there's also Travis Wood in the mix for that fifth spot. And, of course, you know, the usual suspects, Chris Young, so forth.
Yeah.
So, you know, and then obviously how the bullpen shakes out from there. So those two stories, Mike, we'll start with the second base. You hear those four names.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts specifically with Chesler Cuthbert, just because that's such a kind of, hey, here's Chesler Cuthbert now.
The thing with Cuthbert is he's always been a third baseman. You know, when he was coming up, he signed basically as a third baseman, has played third base throughout the minor leagues. It seems like they want to just find a way to get his bat into the lineup and, you know, to avoid putting him on waivers and trying to sneak him through because he's out of options. But when you look at those four, I mean, he's got the least experience at that position compared to the other three. You know, he's the least athletic of all of those. And, you know, it's not to say he's not athletic, but, you know, when you're probably ranking them Mondesi, Merrifield, Colon, and Cuthbert in order of athleticism.
That sounds right.
So, you know, I think this is just they're seeing if he can handle it. I just can't imagine. I mean, over the past couple of seasons, he's done a little bit of like side work at second, just as maybe, okay, could he do this? Would this be possible? We've seen the Royals try like Danny Valencia at second base, you know, in the brief time that he was in the organization. What was that, 2014 or something? 2013, mm-hmm. whenever that was.
Yeah.
And he didn't really do that well. You know, he struggled in the little time that he spent at second base. I would think that Cuthbert would probably do about the same, you know, the kind of struggles. You'd be having a third baseman basically playing out of position. Second base is a lot more of a rangy position. It's not shortstop, but it's still something that you do have to rely on range. It's less of a reaction position. I think he'd struggle there, but if he can handle it, then maybe they do get to throw a bat in there. It just seems to me that they're trying him just in case, just to see. But I don't think that they have enough innings and enough at bats in spring to see enough of him there to really say, hey, we're going to do this. We're going to try this. It might be like maybe one start every other week. He might get a shot at second base. But I just can't see it going to him, especially when the other three options really aren't what you'd call bad. They're not great. It's like, you know, you mentioned to lead into that, the Royals have never, since Frank White, they've never really had a solid second baseman. Omar Infante, Chris Getz, Ruben Gotay, Alberto Callaspo, Carlos Fabless, Terry Schumper, you know, some names, and you recognize the names, but nobody who really panned out. And they're still in that position now where I think they would probably want it to be Mondesi. They'd want him to have a good spring, you know, make a lot of good contact, hit the ball well. But, you know, what we saw of him last year, he was very much overmatched. And I think he could benefit from spending more time in Omaha and really being somebody who maybe by the second half he's ready to be an everyday contributor. But, you know, we've seen Merrifield have some success. We've seen Colon in limited time have some success. And I think those are probably the two most likely guys to end up playing there. Merrifield has a lot of positional flexibility. I think he's already played third and first and second in spring. But in his career as a minor leaguer and in the majors, he's played at a couple of spots. Second base, third base, corner outfield. and you know, he's athletic enough to play those regularly. So, you know, I think he's got a good shot to spend a lot of time at second base. But Colon seems to, it seems like there's been a lot more coverage about Colon this year, at least going into this spring training and into the season. You know, a lot has been made of the fact that he went and trained with Alex Gordon and apparently kept up because he was allowed to continue training with Alex Gordon, which is like, if you ever see Alex Gordon work out, and if, shoot, just look at Alex Gordon, you're like, okay, that's probably a pretty intense regimen. So he's down, I think, reportedly 10 pounds. We'll see. He's always been a good contact guy, not much for power, but I think it's more that he just wants to be versatile and be able to hold up and play more frequently. And it you know, there's no like heavy report. I think in the end they will still probably mix and match, but I think Colon could play a lot at second base, and if he has a good spring, could be the opening day second baseman. But I got to figure it's, you know, I think you're going to see Merrifield, Colon, and Cuthbert all end up making the roster on opening day. You know, Merrifield can be that super utility guy. Cuthbert can DH some. We talked about when the Royals signed Brandon Must. Cuthbert could be a nice platoon partner in a DH spot where he might face the lefties, or he might play third base against some tough lefties and give Moustakas a day off. So, you know, I think there's going to be a role for each of those guys. And if Mondesi still kind of has his struggles, you know, you'll see him in Omaha. So everybody kind of is playing as much as the Royals probably want them to play. And I think at the same time, you know, as long as they're playing good defense, they're not going to be expected to be a guy to carry the offense. I mean, you're probably talking about, you know, who's going to end up hitting eighth or ninth. And, you know, if that means that Hosmer and Moustakas and Perez and Kane and, you know, everybody else is hitting, the Royals are probably in good shape because they don't have to rely on whoever's playing second base. So it's the only real battle in camp, and it's, you know, I don't want to dismiss it and say it's not important, but it's kind of an okay spot because no matter which direction they go, they're probably going to be okay. I would be shocked if Cuthbert plays significant time at second base in the regular season, if any. But if he does, I guess I would trust them to know that he can handle it. So I'm interested to see how it works out. I think it's probably Colon will play the most there, then Merrifield, at least in the first half, and then we'll see how Mondesi develops. We'll see how the team goes. If the team just, you know, wins 20 games in the first half, well, Alcides Escobar is probably going to get traded, and you put Mondesi at short and just let him sink or swim. But I think overall the Royals are pretty comfortable with where they're at, and they just want to make sure that they're, you know, getting the guys in line and, you know, give Cuthbert an opportunity at least to see if he can do it. But I don't know if you can really go wrong with any of those options. I think it's just maybe Colon and Merrifield are more right than the others.
Yeah, and, you know, to me, it feels kind of like I think they are going to – because of exactly what you said, how they're kind of seems that Colon is catching more attention, you know, and it almost feels a lot of it from spring training, you know, it's so hard to really tell what's going on with the players just because they get so little time and it's mostly drill work and that kind of a thing, that a lot of the narratives that come out from it that you hear from, you know, newspaper people, radio people, those kind of things, that narrative is kind of driven off them talking to the players and the coaches and the people in the front office and that sort of a thing. So hearing more about Colon kind of lends to the idea that the organization is warming more to the idea of Colon. They, you know, I mean, for as little playing time as he's had, you know, he's had, you know, some pretty big plays in his career. He literally sure won the World Series with a hit, you know, yep, in Game 5 in 2015. So, I mean, that, you know, it's he's shown that he's capable. You know, it's just a matter of, like you said, you know, getting himself in better shape to where he's more dependable. He's, you know, those kinds of things, and those are, you know, big deals. So, You know, I do think, though, that now that he's kind of recommitted himself, as you said, he's worked out with Alex Gordon, he's getting ready, he definitely wins the, you know, Best Shape of My Life award for the spring. And
patented.
Patented, yes. You know, it's, I can't wait to hear his speech. But he is – it feels like a situation where the Royals are – they really want him to take that, and it's almost his to lose, you know. And so – because I think after seeing what Mondesi did last year, I feel like they'd favor him starting in AAA. And they know what they're going to get with Merrifield. But Merrifield has more versatility, like you mentioned. You know, he's played other positions to a degree that Colon has not.
Yeah.
And, you know, Cuthbert, I just don't think he can cut it. It's just kind of a it's just kind of a let's give him a chance somewhere because he's not going to be at third base because Moustakas is healthy now. So, you know, it's kind of unfortunate for Cuthbert, but at least you're giving him a shot at it. So it feels like they're really kind of zeroed in on Colon, and, you know, it's either very good or very bad if he's not starting on opening day, because it's either very good because someone like Mondesi just took hold of the position to the point where you said, okay, we can't not allow this guy to be in because he's doing so well, or very bad because Colon did so poorly that they're just like, we have to have anybody but him in second base. But we saw the Royals stick with Omar Infante for over two
very
seasons.
Long, and Chris Getz
and
for very
Chris
long.
Getz for a long time, and so on and so forth. So the monumental suckitude that Christian Colon would have in order to get to the point where the Royals are just like, we absolutely cannot. I mean, it would just be – it's unfathomable to me that someone could be that bad. So
right.
Let's hope in that case that that's not what's happening. So it does kind of feel like that'll be the way they go for that. But then – and then you can have Whit Merrifield as kind of your Swiss Army knife type who can just kind of fill in anywhere around the outfield that he needs to.
And can pinch run too. He's a better runner than any other. Well, Mondesi's super fast, but if we're assuming Mondesi's in AAA, then Merrifield's going to be, you know, the best pinch running option of that group.
Yes. So, I do think that it'll be Colon's job. So I hope I'm right, and I hope Colon takes off and becomes exactly what we were hoping for him to be, which is average or slightly above average player.
Yeah, be a Placido Polanco light, and I'm fine with that.
I'm on board.
Go hit 290 and hit you know 25 doubles and play okay defense. And it's like that's fine.
Yeah, you know, 10 home runs and. You know,
that's asking a lot.
Yeah, 10, that's true.
10's a lot.
Five.
He just hit his first one last year, so.
That's true.
Which is kind of surprising. I mean, he's not like, he's short, but he's not like small. And really, Jose Altuve has shown that you don't really have to be big to hit homers. Kind of surprised Colon hasn't hit more, but, you know, some guys don't. I hit one in my entire baseball playing career, and it was probably a fluke.
Yes.
And I'm 6'2", so, you know, what's my excuse?
Yeah. But, so anyway, that's kind of how I feel like that's gonna play out.
And but even if again, Merrifield, Colon, Mondesi, none of those are bad options. So I'm pretty okay with, you know, whomever ends up winning out from that group. But I do prefer to see Mondesi start in AAA because I just think that's the level that he's at. I just don't think that he's quite there yet. But, you know, you'll never know. He might pop out and this spring really, you know, develop with the bat and look good in all facets and give the Royals no real opportunity to send him down. And if that's the case, that's great. That's a pretty big win. That would be a big boost to pretty much everybody. So we'll see. That's the thing to kind of keep an eye on as the weeks lead up to the regular season.
Yes. And secondly, as we mentioned, the kind of next biggest topic thing to keep your eye on, you know, we talk about the starting rotation. We mentioned Nathan Carnes had a really good day on Wednesday. And you know, just some
Travis
some pitching
Wood threw today. Chris Young threw today too.
Yeah, and you know, just some other pitching observations that we have. You know, Danny Duffy had his first outing Didn't do so hot, gave up a home run, you know, didn't look all that great. But it's a little bit different for a guy like Danny Duffy, the established starter. He's proven he can do it in the major leagues. He truly is out there just trying to get his work in, just trying to do what he needs to do, versus someone competing for their job where they need to show everything they can possibly show in the short period of time they have. So when you hear something like Danny Duffy, you know, it's like James Shields. You hear like James Shields gets rocked in spring training, whatever. I don't
right.
care. You know, back when
now
Shields
he did get rocked
team.
All of last season.
Yes,
too,
so. I mean that's what I said. That's what I clarified. When he was with the Royals.
Sure,
if you
sure,
heard
sure.
in 2013 or 14 that James Shields got rocked, you wouldn't have cared because he knows what to do, what he needs to do to get ready.
Exactly.
Duffy, same boat. So on a slightly different note, though, when you hear something about say Kyle Zimmer, who is in fact still in existence, still a thing,
okay,
in the Royals organization, Kyle Zimmer. That's my bumper sticker, but I'm making that. Kyle Zimmer is still a thing, but he's healthy in March now, for the first time in a long time, and you know, still he had, you know, thoracic outlet syndrome surgery and the. His first outing did not go very well. You know, normally as he was drafted, you know, he's a guy that was sitting in that, you know, mid to upper 90s and for his fastball and, you know, had kind of that electric arm and everything. And so that was, you know, kind of a big selling point for him, obviously. And so his first outing, instead of being, you know, 95, 96, 98 in that range, he was sitting closer to that 92, 93 range with his fastball, you know, which is still a decent speed. But when you're dropping 5-6 miles per hour, it's never good. And then, you know, then that was his first inning. He came back for his second inning, and he's hitting 89-90. You know, it's like he just turned into Bruce Chinn from one inning to the next,
yeah.
Which is never good, you know, unless you start telling funny knock-knock jokes.
But, sure.
And I heard an interview with J.J. Piccolo on the radio where he said, and this is what the kind of, you know, not to have too alarmist of a term, but the kind of frightening reality of the new Kyle Zimmer could be, which is Piccolo himself said, you know, we have to realign our expectations with what Kyle Zimmer is now after thoracic outlet syndrome. He mentioned that, you know, the thoracic outlet syndrome surgery actually had physiologically changed Kyle Zimmer's body, or it could have, to the point where you know, now like his arm slot is going to be different, and it's not something like, hey, we need to tweak your mechanics. It's the way your body is now after that surgery. Your arm slot is different. You have a new arm slot, and there's nothing we can do about it. And so Zimmer and apparently, you know, they, you know, Chris Young has mentioned before that this was a similar issue that he had to deal with. And, you know, it's less of a concern for him because Chris Young was never a hard ball guy, never a hard thrower guy. Mm-hmm. So he always was kind of dealing in that finesse range. So, you know, it's going to be an adjustment apparently for Kyle Zimmer, and the organization has already started to realign their expectations, and we probably have too as fans. You know, obviously we've realigned to him never being healthy, but now that he is healthy, it's okay. Is the stuff that was always there that we talked about before, that, you know, in his small periods of healthiness, he still looked good previously. And now we're seeing, okay, he's healthy going into the season for the first time in a long time, and now he doesn't look very good. So, you know, hopefully it's just the first outing, and he's still, you know, he's trying to get fully back from rehab and all that, and things will start to pick up. He's going to pitch on – is it Saturday or is it tomorrow?
It will be Saturday is the one I saw.
So he'll pitch on Saturday. Hopefully it'll be a little bit better, and he can kind of incrementally get better. And, you know, he's not projected to start the season on the roster anyway, so he's going to have time in the minors to try and work things out as well. But, you know, it's kind of troubling news to hear that. So you put – you know, so all these things kind of working together, you know, with how, you know, Nathan Carnes and Travis Wood look decent. You know, Carnes looked really good. Danny Duffy, you know, doing his thing. And then you've got, you know, the issues with Kyle Zimmer. You know, how do you feel right now for – seems like the, you know, the big the big open spot is the Royals' fifth starter spot for how it'll be, you know, who's going to fill that, and then they'll kind of backfill the bullpen from there. So who's the leader in the clubhouse in your eyes from what you have Carnes in that spot right now?
I would figure on Carnes. I feel like they went and got him. They traded Dyson, which was not an easy trade to make, and they went and got him. And I think they had it in mind that he was going to be able to start for them. So, and just like we talked about then, you know, maybe it's something that Dave Island saw, maybe it's something that somebody else on the staff saw that, hey, you know, we know how to reach that untapped potential, because Carnes has, you know, a good fastball and a good curveball. It's just he has some control issues and he has some issues getting through a lineup the second or third time. And if he can kind of work through those issues, then, you know, that's a pretty decent fifth starter, a guy with a good amount of upside who isn't going to, you know, really put you in a bad spot. So I think he's a good option to be the fifth starter anyway and should be the favorite. You know, they've got, you know, Chris Young through. He went two scoreless today, but he did give up a couple of hits, gave up a walk. But, you know, he got through it. You know, Mike Minor threw well from the looks of it. Granted, it's spring training. I haven't been able to see any of these games, so going off of radio broadcast, game day, and what's reported. But, you know, he performed well, and the Royals seem pretty happy with his progress so far going into camp. And Travis Wood is another candidate for that spot, but we've talked about, like, his lefty-righty splits aren't good. But he did pitch today, and he went two innings, gave up an unearned run, but, you know, ended up coming through pretty well. So, you know, he's kind of holding serve as well. But I would say Carnes is the favorite. Young is maybe a fallback. So I don't imagine that, you know, anybody but Carnes is the, you know, I think he's the favorite. You're going to see him probably working more longer, you know, three, four innings at a time as we go. And, you know, Wood, you might see him settle into continuing to do two innings at a time just because, you know, inevitably he's going to be that guy. He's going to be a lefty reliever who you can kind of trust against some righties every now and then. And I think that's what fits best for the Royals. You know, how that shakes out for the rest of the bullpen, you know, we'll see. Maybe Moylan is the next guy up. Maybe it's Chris Withrow. You know, I don't know. There's a lot of guys in camp who could be in that bullpen, but, you know, fifth starter is probably going to be the most heated battle, I would say. It just depends on, you know, how Carnes can add as he goes along and how they use Wood and how they use Young. But, you know, when I get to Zimmer too, but you know, I was trying to follow that game, but the game day wasn't updating. So I was at the mercy of you know, the radio broadcast, which is fine. It's just I wanted to see the pitches. I wanted to see the velocity. I wanted to see the locations. He had a couple of two-strike at-bats that, you know, he'd lost. Ryan Rua hit a homer off him. Joey Gallo got a base hit off of him. You know, maybe that's just shaking off the rust. He was, you know, 92, 93, but he did hit 94, 95 a little bit here and there. The real thing is going to be, how does he perform the second time through? You know, what's going to happen when he shows up on Saturday? If he starts out and he's still 92, 93 and can touch 94 and 95, and then he sits down and comes out for a second inning and he's still in that zone, feel a lot better. If he comes out and has a repeat where he's, you know, low to mid 90s in the first inning and then 89, 90 in the second, that's cause for concern. If he starts out 91, 90, 89 to start the game on Saturday, that's where it starts to really sink in.
Red flag.
Oh,
so,
boy.
So what do you think is more important in your eyes? Would you rather see Zimmer come out and tick up a few miles per hour, and then, you know, maybe he drops off from first inning to second inning, but it's you know, up a couple miles per hour in each instance, or would you rather see him be consistent from first inning to second, wherever that is? You know, obviously if it's 90-91, that's no good for anything, but say he comes out first inning hitting 93-95 and then maintains that for the second inning, would you rather see that, or would you rather see him go, you know, 95-96 in the first inning, but then, you know, 91-92 in the second?
I think I'd kind of rather see at this stage something where he is kind of 92, 93, 94 consistently, because I think that as you get deeper into spring training and once the season gets going, you can kind of amp it up a little bit. You know, the games now, not to say that they're not competitive and guys aren't competing, but they're spring training games. I don't think the Royals expect Kyle Zimmer to, you know, start the year on the main roster. I don't think he, I mean, maybe he expects it, but, you know, realistically probably won't. And so it's just a matter of not seeing that drop off and being able to maintain the stuff throughout an appearance. If it turns out that, you know, you find out that this year coming back from that surgery and really working back from where he didn't, you know, he threw five innings last year. If it means that he's only a one inning guy this year, I guess you take it as long as everything's good, and then you hope that maybe he can build off of that going into next year. But it's, you know, it does dampen the you know, the excitement that you would have from having a presumably healthy Kyle Zimmer in camp. But you know, I think the Royals, I don't know what their expectations are of him right now at all. So I, you know, I'm not sure what they're expecting, if they're being a little cautious with them now. So it might just be that if it shows that throughout spring he can only really bring it in one inning, well, that kind of tells you what role he's going to have this year. And then you hope that maybe he can continue to develop and, you know, maintain some of that stuff and velocity and endurance for more than one inning. But you know, inevitably it might just be that he's going to be a reliever. I think at this stage, the Royals might just live with that based off of all the issues he's had with his health. You know, if they can get anything out of him. Kelvin Herrera had a similar kind of thing where he just never seemed to get it going when they tried to make him a starter. He kept having, you know, health issue after health issue. And finally they were like, you know, whatever, let's just make him a reliever. And he started to thrive. So, you know, if that's what happens with Kyle Zimmer, and he's a guy who can just, you know, be a good seventh, eighth inning guy down the line next year, year after that, I guess it's okay. It's disappointing, but, you know, at least you're getting something from him. So, you know, he's past the
point of could be an ace, I think, at this juncture. Yeah. I think now it's exactly what
that was kind of lofty even when he was drafted. He looked like he could be a pretty good guy who could,
yeah, or a front end starter, you yeah know, a, yeah a one to, somewhere in the 1-3 you thought. Mm-hmm. That was, you know, I think those days are kind of gone. I think your ceiling for him is probably a 3, which is still really good. I would love to see that happen.
Yeah, live
if
with
he
that.
Becomes Ian, you know, if he becomes Ian Kennedy from last year for the rest of his career, that sign me up right now. But you know, I think you're totally right. At this point you just have to say, we need to get something from you. You're a top five draft pick. Same story for Christian Colon. Same story for Bubba Starling. Those are 3 years in a row after, so, you know, after hitting on a lot of draft picks for Dayton Moore, those three draft picks right there, you know, if you want to talk about the future past 2017 and what issues the Royals could possibly have, a lot of it goes to that. You had three top five draft picks, and you're right now, like today, you can make the argument that you're going to get nothing from any of them in 2018. So, you know, that's the point we're at with Kyle Zimmer. I mean, there's something, you need to get something from him, just like you need to get something from Colon, just like you need to get something, you know, from Stelz. Now they're not going to get anything from Starling, but
they're not. You know. Though he's got two hits in spring.
Hey,
I think last year he didn't get a hit till just before they sent him to minor league camp. So
yeah, only took him 40 at bats to get two hits.
Yeah.
What do you know?
That's, oh, Bubba.
He has not had 40 at bats. I don't know how many.
Six, I think.
Hey, look at that.
One of them was a blooper.
Turn the corner.
But it happens. It counts.
It does happen. So, anyway, Yeah, that it'll be interesting to see how that kind of shakes out. You mentioned a lot of good names in terms of, you know, relievers they have available, and you know, I think they've done a really good job of getting people that are in a position to, you know, make that kind of back end of the rotation and the bullpen really fluid. So, you know, I'm glad that, you know, Dayton Moore is in charge of these things because he's really good at identifying those types of talent, and he's done it before. Seems like he'll do it again. I'm pretty, you know, the bullpen's not going to be 2015 levels, but it's still going to be good. They're still going to be okay.
Yeah.
You know, and they're still going to be top half of in all of baseball, I think, if not, you know, better. Kelvin Herrera is going to be, you know, he showed last year when Wade Davis went down, he can handle that closer role, no problem. I'm not concerned about that. I do think Soria's going to have a bounce back here. And, you know, I think it's I think they're going to be okay in the bullpen. And, you know, it'll just be that fifth starter spot, that kind of who knows. And, I'd love to see it. It's almost like a Christian Colon scenario with that spot as well, where it's just if Carnes isn't your guy – then, you know, he's either so unbelievably bad they had to put Chris Young back in there after the 2016 he had, which is a bad state to be in, or somebody else was so good they simply couldn't ignore it and they had to give him the spot over Carnes. So, you know,
yeah,
from what we've seen, it looks like Carnes is the guy, is that guy that's being so far, you know, it's very small.
Yeah, we're a week through spring training.
Yeah, very beginning of spring training, but, you know, if anybody was going to come out and steal that spot, you'd perform like Nate Carnes already did, and he's basically, you know, he's the guy that's the front runner anyway. So
yeah,
that's what you love to see when things work out. Yeah, when things work out as planned, that's a good thing.
Yeah, and the fallback is, hey, Carnes can just go be a, you know, a reliever and throw 95 plus with a wicked curveball. It sounds familiar to me. Sounds like a guy we just traded to the Cubs. So. Not to say that Nate Carnes is going to end up being Wade Davis someday, but if that's the fallback, if he doesn't cut it as a starter, he's got the kind of stuff that kind of fits that same profile. And we'll see if attitude and consistency are there, but you know, that's not a bad plan B for a guy. And you know, to be fair, a lot of teams are going to struggle with their fifth starter spot this year. The Royals last year finished 500, and they really didn't even have a fourth or fifth starter most of the season. They were pretty miserable past, you know, past Kennedy. Even Volquez wasn't any good. So, you know, it's just, you know, I think they're in a good spot where they have some depth. They have some options. We'll see Jason Hamill throw. I think he throws this weekend, maybe tomorrow even. Vargas thrown once. He got hit around a little bit, but I just have a feeling on Vargas. I know a lot of people are kind of iffy on Vargas, but I kind of think he's going to be okay. They have a lot of depth guys available in the bullpen. You know, Moylan is one, Withrow, Bobby Parnell. Brandon Lee had a really rough game, so I don't know how that's going to go. Jonathan Sanchez, I think, got guys out.
What?
Yeah.
That hasn't happened in years.
And he didn't walk anybody. He did give up 3 hits, though. Soria's thrown 2 scoreless so far. So, you know, I think the bullpen's going to be fine. They have options. They have some guys they can stash in the minors for a month, maybe 2 months before, you know, major league opt-outs come through. So I think they'll have something that they can lean on and piece together and not get to a spot where, you know, you're looking at Brooks Pounder. You know, not to say Brooks Pounders is going to be iffy, but he's, you know, when the Royals got into like August and they were looking at Scott Alexander and Brooks Pounders and Kevin McCarthy to try to bridge the game to, you know, Kelvin Herrera and Joaquin Soria, it was a little iffy. And at least the Royals have more options right now and can start the season with, you know, feeling pretty comfortable. Or at least more comfortable considering that, you know, they didn't get Holland. Hoshaver's not available yet. I mean, maybe he is, but nobody seems content enough to try to sign him and that they trade away Davis. So I think they have options. I think they have some depth. They have some guys who this first turn through are performing well. So all of that is a pretty good start for the first week of spring training, which, you know, that's as good as it gets. Nobody got hurt. Nobody got shelled, really. Jake Junis has been hit, but the Royals don't really expect him to be up much, I don't think. So that's not a huge deal. And, so it's not a bad start for a spring training through, you know, the first week.
Yeah. So those are kind of the big storylines that we'll have, you know, the people are keeping an eye on and that we'll be keeping an eye on as well. Maybe some other key storylines will emerge. You know, maybe Jorge Soler will be tearing the cover off the ball. And we didn't even mention the legend of Peter O'Brien.
Peter O'Brien,
who last season. So StatCast has been measuring exit velocity of balls off of bats for few years now. Nothing, you know, in terms of relative to baseball statistics, you know, nothing like any other stat. So it's very small, but
it's brand new.
Yes, but the hardest hit baseball ever in history was hit by Peter O'Brien in spring training last year, 119.5 mile per hour exit velocity off of his bat. I mean, this guy's prodigious power. Clint Scholes said that he has legit 80 level power on the 20 to 80 scouting scale. So, you know, he's been hitting some towering home runs both in games and in batting practice. He apparently there's some huge wall in center field in the Peoria stadium, and he's easily cleared that with his shot the other day.
Straight away apparently center.
And he did something that all the coaches and everyone said they'd never seen before, which is he hit a ball in batting practice so far. You know, not only was it a home run and past the stadium, but it cleared some sort of street, some sort of walkway, carrying distance, whatever, and went into the other park where the minor leaguers were practicing. And apparently, you know, all the people in the organization were saying they had never seen it before, seen anybody hit the ball that far. So, you know, he could be like a Pedro Serrano type guy where he can only hit fastballs. Who knows? Is, you know, we've got plenty of time to discuss Peter O'Brien, but that's probably the only other narrative that's emerged, really. We'll put a pin in that one and save it for later.
Yeah, we'll see how he develops. But,
yeah.
Ideally, he can make better contact and maybe walk a little bit. You know, he's going to strike out a lot no matter what. You can get by with that. I mean, guys like Adam Dunn is probably the best example. You know, he hit 40 home runs every year for felt like 15 years, but struck out almost 200 times every year. But he walked like 100 times too. So it was basically like half the time he went to the plate, he was either going to strike out, walk, or hit a homer. So if O'Brien can get to that point, he's going to have some value. But, you know, that's kind of been the knock on him is, you know, making contact. If you can't make contact, ball doesn't go very far. So that's kind of the hope that he gets that sorted out. And if he does, if he keeps hitting homers and just keeps smashing the ball, it's going to make it an interesting roster crunch by the end because there's, you know, there's not really a spot for him right now. When you kind of look at it, he'll play left field. He could play first base. Doesn't really have a position. So he's going to have to hit to really make it. He does have options, so he can play in Omaha for a little bit. But, you know, he's definitely interesting. And, you know, when you come out and you hit a bunch of homers in the first week of spring training and they're, you know, bombs, that's going to get a lot of attention. So he's kind of on the radar. We'll see how, you know, over the next month, how he ends up performing. And if he hits like 9 more homers, well, the Royals have decisions to make, which would be kind of interesting, kind of fun. Be nice to have a guy who can hit 12 homers in a month on the roster. I don't think they've had that in a long time.
No, they haven't. So with that, we'll leave you. Well, those are the things that, you know, we'll kind of – that'll probably be driving a lot of spring training because the rest of the roster is pretty well set. So we'll keep an eye on that. We'll be with you all the rest of spring training as we hurtle towards that opening day,
like a month away.
Yeah, it's not that far. And it's getting there. You know, the weather's getting nicer, the sun's staying out longer, it's getting to be baseball season again. I'm starting to get really excited.
Get the fever.
Getting that fever, you know. It's back. So stick with us and we will guide you through these last tough days before we get into the real season, and then of course we'll be with you all season. And so don't forget to visit our sponsors, Kelly's West Bourdain, of course. Go there, have a few beers. St. Patrick's Day is coming up. Kelly's obviously the epicenter of St. Patrick's Day in Kansas City.
So much so that they kind of ask us to not show up the day after.
Yes.
Because they need to recover too. So they work hard on that day.
Yes. So there's that. And then BP Kansas City, of course, go to the website. Lots of great stuff being written. You know, it's a good time of year where since things are kind of slow, there's just kind of meandering spring training stuff. But the you know, there's lots of good topics that you can really dive into that some of our writers are looking into that, you know, you might not necessarily have time to during the season. So definitely check out BP Kansas City. I'm doing a lot of great stuff there as always. Stick with us. We'll be back next week. Until then, thanks for stopping by. And as always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at bprokansascity. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to kansascitybaseballvault@gmail.com.
Hey, Troy, what are you doing this weekend?
I'm going to grab a beer somewhere. What do you have in mind?
I heard about this awesome new bar downtown. It's called Rage. The waitresses have a contest to see who has the most piercing.
No, man, that's not really my scene.
Well, there's another bar close by called Spit Cup. Check it out. The bartenders wear chaps, and every hour they shoot a guy.
No, seriously, I just want a bar where I can sit down and watch the game.
Okay, I've got just the place. It's called Lilac. You sit on pillows, and you drink from eucalyptus leaves.
No, Ned, but I just want a place where I can get a cheap drink and watch the football game.
Okay, I got it. This place, it's got a TV. It's called 816. All their drinks come in NBA hats.
Man, I just want a place like Kelly's.
Oh, you mean Kelly's Westport Inn? No, they've got all the basketball and bowl games. They've even got a heated roof. The view is really nice, too, if you know what I'm saying. Why didn't you just say you wanted to go to Kelly's?
Kelly's Westport Inn, 500 Westport Road. Make it your place to go any time of the week.